Presenter is Nancy Gemeinhart. She is currently the Program Director for Occupational Health Services for BJC Healthcare in St. Louis. She directs the Occupational Health Services Department, which includes Occupational Infection Control, Occupational Health, Worker Compensation, and Wellness Issues, including Illness Prevention and Injury Prevention. So, Nancy.
So good afternoon. What I want to cover today is a little bit on the background of influenza, although you probably all know all about flu. Talk about healthcare worker or healthcare personnel recommendations to vaccinate healthcare personnel, the steps that we took to make healthcare personnel and influenza immunization a condition of employment. A little bit about the change model, how we developed our policy and implemented it, and what our outcomes were. So everyone in this room probably knows as much or more about influenza than I do. But what's important to note when it comes to healthcare workers are things that we do know is that influenza can have asymptomatic infections occur. Viral shedding precedes the symptom onset at least 24 hours in advance, and we know very well that healthcare personnel work when they are ill. They save their sick days for fun things. Healthcare-associated transmission does increase the morbidity, mortality, and length of stay for patients being cared for. It increases census in the hospital, and if employees are ill and have high absenteeism, then there's no one left to care for the patients. Influenza's impact on healthcare causes an additional $1 to $3 billion in the U.S. each year, and exposure evaluations of healthcare personnel are costly and labor-intensive. ACIP has recommended that healthcare personnel get an annual influenza immunization since the early 1980s. The purpose is to prevent healthcare-associated transmission. It is a core patient and healthcare personnel safety practice. However, nationally, rates among healthcare personnel are low, averaging in the 40s to 49% in 2008, and in the 30s for H1N1 in 2009. The benefits of annual immunization include improved patient safety. You develop herd immunity if you can reach 80%. You have reduced absenteeism of your staff, and you'll have a critical societal workforce that's vaccinated during outbreaks. You will have healthier, more productive employees, and the employees benefit by having fewer visits to their physicians. Healthcare personnel cite a multitude of reasons for not receiving their annual immunizations. And when we looked at this in the past, we got the same reasons from our healthcare workers as what's published in the literature. And you can see what's here. Fear of adverse reactions. They don't consider flu to be serious. One of my favorites is they just don't get the flu. And so forth. There are a lot of recommendations out there to increase healthcare personnel vaccination rates from ACIP, HCPCS, the Joint Commission standard came out in 2007. Professional organizations, APIC, SHEA, and IDSA all have recommendations to increase vaccination rates of healthcare workers. This is a list of everything that's part of the recommendations. They have organized campaigns, free vaccine, make it convenient, have incentives out there. Vaccinate everyone unless there's a contraindication or they actively decline with declination statements. Do surveillance for healthcare-associated influenza and evaluate your reasons for non-participation, and then each year improve on your campaign to increase rates. There's beginning some support for mandatory immunization of healthcare personnel. The Society for Healthcare Epidemiology of America, along with IDSA, published a paper last September they updated their position statement to mandate for all healthcare personnel employed and granted privileges, including students, volunteers, and contract workers, and accept medical exemptions only as part of their recommendations. Also, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Department of Defense, and the National Patient Safety Foundation are beginning to support mandatory programs. There are pros and cons for a mandatory program. What are the pros? You're going to have increased immunization rates, improved patient and employee safety. You can get your vaccines accomplished a lot faster. You will have reduced post-exposure workups of your employees and improved public health. The perceived cons are negative employee reactions and perceived violations of individual rights. However, healthcare workers have other conditions of employment. In our organization, we require on hire that they're immune to measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella. We do annual TB skin testing. We have dress codes, no artificial nails, proper attire in the OR. These are all conditions of employment. And healthcare workers care for patients regardless of their diagnosis. Virginia Mason Medical Center in 2005 was the first hospital to implement a mandatory program, and for 5 years they have had vaccination rates of averaging about 98%. We began our program in 2008, and there are others who followed, and you can see those on the Immunization Action Coalition's honor roll online. So let me tell you a little bit about BJC Healthcare. It's a large, not-for-profit healthcare organization located in Missouri. We have 13 hospitals that are acute care. They're urban, suburban, and rural hospitals. We have almost 3,500 staffed beds, with a range of our smallest hospital having 40 beds to the largest being over 1,100. We have two teaching hospitals, one adult, one academic. Three long-term care facilities or nursing homes. We have multiple outpatient services. We have home care, medical groups or physician practices, behavioral health, occupational medicine, and we have more than 27,000 employees in our organization. Our definition of healthcare personnel is everyone who receives a paycheck from BJC. We've always had a comprehensive program, at least since 1997, and vaccine has always been free. We developed in 2003 and implemented through 2006 our best practice for our annual influenza campaign. It was standardized and systematic across the organization, and our purpose was to promote maximum employee participation. The vaccines were convenient. We went to the healthcare personnel. We caught physician house staff at their morning rounds. We were in the cafeteria, in the hallways, roaming with carts. We utilized partners, key partners, to administer vaccine. For example, like in the operating room, we had liaisons who work in there to administer vaccine so those employees didn't have to come out of the OR. We had large advertisement and communication programs, a lot of education in attempts to dispel those myths that are out there. We offered incentives and even as much as $1,000 after taxes on employees' paychecks. We had catchy themes, and we always monitored participation and reported the rates back to our key stakeholders. These are some of the themes that we've utilized in the past. What we found with our best practice approach was it was very time-consuming, in particular for the occupational health departments. We had long immunization periods, and the occupational health nurses were chasing down these healthcare personnel, trying to convince them to get vaccinated. But it was too easy for the healthcare workers to say no, and our increase in participation was incremental. So declination statements have been recommended by several professional organizations, and they're a great tool to meet the Joint Commission standard because you can educate the employee and survey for improvement. But still, you have healthcare personnel who are not vaccinated, and so they can transmit influenza to their patients and coworkers. And this demonstrated only moderate increases in our organization. So the next step that we took in 2007 was to add the measurement for healthcare personnel vaccination rates to our best-in-class scorecard. This is an incentivized scorecard of which the leadership is financially incented on different quality measures. The target was set at 80% healthcare worker immunization rates across the organization. What we achieved was overall 71.1%, with a range of 51% to 87%. And we vaccinated over 18,000 employees. At the time, we had just a little over 25,000. 16% signed declination statements, but there were 13% that were neither vaccinated nor signed declination statements. It had the same challenges as our best practice campaigns. It was very time-consuming, difficult to track down the employees, and we had long campaigns. In conclusion, we did not establish our goal. So our next step, this shows you how we, when we implemented our best practice here in 03, we had that shortage in 04. That wasn't fun. Where we piloted declination statements and then where we placed the measurement on our scorecard. So we decided that we needed to develop a mandatory program. There were a lot of challenges to consider. The big thing was to change the culture. In our organization, in order to have an effective and efficient program, we believe that not only do you need to have good technical or high-quality technical strategy, but you also have to develop an acceptance of change or change management. And we wanted to continually focus on consistency and remember our mission along the way. Just very briefly, we utilize what we call the ACT model, Accelerating Change and Transition, for our change management. So you want to have a champion to lead the way. This is the person who says this is important. You need to create a sense of urgency for people to react now, not wait till next year, or let's wait and see what everyone else does. We want to do this now. And you need to have a clear, focused vision to reach your desired outcome. And you need to make sure your outcome is clear, legitimate, widely understood, and shared among all of your key partners. What will tomorrow look like? You need to build your coalitions and commitment and consider who should be your key partners, where should you begin, and what inevitable resistance will you get, because you will get some resistance. You need to chart a transition roadmap for your acceptance strategy as well as your plan development. So you need to build the acceptance, and it has to be a real plan. You want to align your systems and structures. Make sure that what you have planned, you will be supported with the training, tools, and rewards to take the risk and to be successful. And then, of course, you want to sustain the momentum. There's always a transition zone of change, and it requires constant attention to fueling the energy for forward action. One of the key questions in sustaining the momentum is, to ask yourself is this for real? And believe me, we asked ourselves this every single day. So what was our technical strategy and how did we develop our policy? Our employee influenza immunization policy is an HR policy, human resources, and the implementation process owner is occupational health. Our purpose is to protect our patients, employees, family members, and the community from influenza infection through annual immunization. The policy applies to all BJC healthcare employees with or without direct patient care, our vendors who come into our hospitals, contracted clinical personnel, students, and volunteers. The vaccine is still free of charge, as it always has been. We begin around October 15th. If hospitals want or service organizations want to start before then, that is fine. But our deadline is December 15th. New hires are vaccinated through March 31st. And if new hires come into the system and they don't want to get their influenza vaccine at hire, they are referred back to HR. And then occupational health maintains the records. For employees who are vaccinated outside the organization at other locations, they must provide proof that they were immunized. Can be with a receipt, a physician's note, a copy of the consent. We do accept medical exemptions and religious accommodations only. The medical exemption process is made through occupational health. We have a standardized form that the employee would take to their personal licensed physician. It has to be an MD or a DO. And our criteria for medical exemption is based on CDC guidelines and manufacturer recommendations. Any questionable requests for medical exemption are reviewed by a physician, and requests outside the established criteria are denied. Employees are notified of the status of their request within 5 days in writing, and we have a standard form for that also. We have temporary exemptions, such as, unfortunately, there are some obstetricians out there who still wish that their patients were not vaccinated against influenza. So we do accept those, but each year, for a temporary exemption, you have to submit another request. But if a new mom delivers and comes back to work before March 31st, she has to be vaccinated in order to return. The exemption is no longer present. And then we have permanent medical exemptions for allergy or history of Guillain-Barré as examples. These do not need to be requested each year unless vaccine technology changes to eliminate the contraindication. For religious accommodation or religious exemptions, requests are made through human resources. The letter of request is written by the employee and submitted to their local HR department. Again, the employee is notified in writing of the status of their request, and this must be done each year. Exempt employees are requested or encouraged to wear a mask only in patient care areas when they are within 6 feet of patients. This is done when it's influenza season in their local community. And this time frame is determined by the medical director for the Infection Prevention Consortium for BJC. Some of our hospitals do mandate mask use, but again, it's when the healthcare personnel are within 6 feet of patients. Our policy is a condition of employment. Compliance with the policy is a condition of employment. Our vaccination deadline is December 15th. If an employee remains non-compliant, they are suspended for 30 days unless they're already on a final warning for something else, and then their employment is terminated. If they are non-compliant after the 30 days on January 14th, then their employment is terminated. So over the past 3 years, you can see that we had a transformational change in our vaccination rates for our employees. We've achieved over 98% each of the past 3 years. And we achieved over 98% immunization. We did this with both seasonal and H1N1 in 2009. The keys to our success, or what we consider the keys to our success, is properly building the case and getting the buy-in. We could not have done this without our senior leadership support. They were very committed to what we were doing. The acceptance strategy and our plan to carry that out was key to our success. We had key partnerships and collaboration among multiple departments, and you'll see who was involved in a minute. We had constant and standardized communication. We made sure that each hospital had the same communication tools to communicate with their employees, and we launched the communication on the same day across the organization. Our mission of patient safety was always in the forefront. We had to be willing to compromise during our planning process along the way, and we always had to be prepared for anything that might arise because we did have some surprises along the way. I think that our organizational president and CEO said it best when he said to the employees, to answer the question, why is BJC requiring flu vaccinations? He said, we know how to prevent flu. We know how to protect patients and coworkers from getting the flu. We should use everything we know to make sure that our patients have every opportunity to get better. After all, that's why we do what we do. So I'd like to acknowledge our key partners along the way, and in particular, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Dunnigan, the Vice President of Quality, because he was our champion. So thank you.